This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Okay, guys, I am probably one of the most accident-prone people on the planet. You can blame it on many things, bad luck, poor spatial perception, but it all results in the same thing. Bree can injure herself literally anywhere, anytime. Take, for instance, last week, I was plucking my eyebrows, people, and I stabbed myself in the hand. Next thing I know, I am bleeding everywhere going, what the heck just happened? But luckily for me, I had some Active Skin Repair on hand, just one spray, and it felt so much better. By the next day, it was not red, not sore. It was fantastic. I love this stuff. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, and since it's all natural, non-toxic, it's perfect for people like me with sensitive skin. It works by utilizing hydrochloric acid, which mimics a natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support the healing. With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients that are so safe and clean that it can be used from the youngest member of your family all the way up to the oldest, most accident prone like me, you can have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. So visit www.activeskincarerepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order by using the code NOGUILT. That's www.activeskinrepair.com. Use the code NOGUILT to get 20% off your order.
Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast. I am your host, Joanne Crone, joined by the lovely Bree Tucker.
Why, hello, hello, everybody. How are you?
We have got such an important episode for you today because I do it myself. I notice it in my daughter. As women, we're extremely self-critical. Do you see it in yourself, Bree?
Oh, we were just talking about this earlier, about negative self-talk. And you know that is something that I struggle with quite a bit. I try to catch myself, but if you know somebody that's like Bree, that's a chronic, I'm sorry, that takes ownership of the world's problems,
yes,
then they might have a problem with not being like nice self-talk.
The self-talk, and it goes beyond self-talk. Yeah. What we're talking about today is self-compassion, and it was revolutionized and started by Dr. Kristen Neff, who was one of our podcast guests.
Oh, she's been on the list. She was on the list that you gave me before we started the podcast.
Yes.
She was on the original. Yes. So this is a long time coming episode, people.
We teach her work in our balance program. It has changed my own life using a self-compassion practice and my own mental health. Dr. Kristen Neff, she's a researcher who founded the field of self-compassion study, and she's written several books on it, including Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself, and Fierce Self-Compassion, How Women Can Harness Kindness to Speak Up, Claim Their Power, and Thrive. And we hope you enjoy our interview with Kristen.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Welcome, Dr. Neff, to the podcast. I am personally super excited to have you on here because I've read both of your books. We teach your self-compassion practices in our balance program. So it is really such an honor. So welcome.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I love talking with parents and moms in particular. So it's great.
So I'm a mom. I have a 14-year-old daughter and I have a 10-year-old son. And I was talking with her about how excited I was to interview you. And we're talking about self-compassion. And she had a great question. And I'm like, that's a good question. And I am going to ask Dr. Neff. She wanted to know, what's the difference between self-love and self-compassion? Is there a difference?
Yeah, I mean, there's overlap, obviously. So I define self-compassion as having three components. There's kindness and warmth, but there's also mindfulness, which is the ability to see things clearly, to pay attention to what's happening, to not distort them or shove them under the rug. And also a sense of common humanity, right? So in other words, the difference between compassion and pity is other people. So compassion is like everyone struggles, everyone's imperfect. And I'm all for self-love. The slight problem is you might say that a narcissist has self-love. So what's the difference? Right? So with the narcissist, it's all about me. And the narcissist is not going to admit that they're imperfect and they have flaws. So compassion, also love is almost uniquely positive. Compassion, the word passion in the Latin means to suffer. So it's how are we with the difficulties? How are we with our mistakes, our feelings of inadequacy, our difficult times, the challenges in our life? And can we be with them, remembering that we're human, that all people are imperfect, that everyone struggles, and yes, some more than others, of course, but nonetheless, that's what makes us human, is the fact that we're imperfect. And so self-love is, you know, I think if you're self-compassionate, you do love yourself, but it's based on your humanity, not on the fact that you're special and above average, for instance. And the other big difference is that it's not contingent. It's unconditional self-love. A lot of self-love is contingent. You know, I love myself when I look a certain way or when I succeed or, you know, if I make enough money or people like me. It's kind of like self-esteem that way. Self-esteem is basically a judgment of worth and it's often conditional. So at least the way I've defined it, self-compassion is unconditional. The moment you're born, right? You don't have to like go to graduate school to be worthy of compassion. You're worthy of compassion just because you're a human being struggling the best you can moment by moment. So that's basically, I would say, the difference.
So I love the integration of the passion meaning suffering thing, because that is something that I've really noticed in the self-compassion practice, this notice that you are suffering and you are hurting. And just the other day, my daughter was being really hard on herself and like, oh, I didn't pay attention. Oh, I didn't do this. And this is a constant thing we have. And I come up to her and I'm like, okay, you're hurting right now. You're in pain. She's like, no, I'm not, Mom. I'm just dumb. And it's such a... No, that's so hard to hear. But I don't think it's uncommon. And I said that to myself before I found your work. Could you lead people exactly through what the steps of self-compassion are?
Yeah, well, so that's actually why we start with mindfulness, because a mindfulness is the ability to be with what's happening as opposed to resisting it, either making it want to go away, or sometimes we resist it by like, okay, I really do have control. It's just that I'm not smart enough. And if I were to have smart enough, I would be able to control everything. So mindfulness is kind of the clear recognition that, first of all, these things happen and we aren't in total control. We can do our best. Of course, it's not like we stop trying, but we aren't in total control. So my son, I raised him to have self-compassion. Now, he's autistic, but nonetheless, he's pretty high functioning. And he used to tell me when he was a teenager, don't give me that self-compassion stuff, Mommy. I don't want to accept the pain. He didn't want to accept the reality that he was hurting. He wanted to fix it immediately.
He's like, is there a shortcut?
And I was like, well, good luck with that one. I wish there was, but there isn't. Right?
Yeah, let me know when you
exactly.
find it.
And by the way, compassion isn't everything. Also, there's celebration, there's appreciation of the good things. But in particular, compassion means how are you with the pain and the suffering and the hurt? And because that's where we get into trouble. It's easier to be with the good stuff. It's hard to be with that feeling I've made a mistake or I've got grief or I've got fear. We want to suppress it, make it go away. So we need the support of our own warmth. And that's where the kindness comes in and the sense of connectedness. Normally, it's not logical, but normally we feel like everyone else in the world is living a normal, perfect life. And it's just me who's screwed up or it's just me who's going through this. And that makes it so much worse. First of all, it's not true. That's the basic.
Right.
But it makes it harder. Right? We feel like we're all alone and we feel disempowered. So that's why I really teach the three components together. So you said, what are the steps of it? Basically, you need to start with mindfulness, because if you aren't aware that you're having a hard time, you don't even know you need compassion. So it'd be like a friend who called you up and said, hey, I really need to talk. I'm having a hard time. You're like, oh, I'm too busy to talk to you. So you got to take your own phone call. And that's mindfulness, basically.
You have to know that you're suffering. It's so interesting.
Know that you're suffering.
With the mindfulness aspect, I was talking with a new friend this weekend, and she had recently left a religion. But she says that in her religion, the common advice when you were struggling with something is to just put it on your shelf. Just put it on your shelf and forget about it. And it goes so contrary to actually noticing the pain and what you're going through.
How do you do that? Is there a book that tells you how to stuff your feelings away and make sure that they sit on the shelf and don't come back?
Here's what we know in psychology. We know a lot about this. You can compartmentalize, and sometimes you need to. Like if you're a doctor, there are times you need to compartmentalize. But first of all, it comes back to haunt you eventually. This research shows, the more you resist it, the more you think about it, because it takes energy. Emotions arise and they do their dance and they pass away. And when you put it on the shelf, it's never leaving that shelf, and it's stuck in your body, and it will come out in other ways when you least expect it, including physically.
Oh, yeah. She said a common thing amongst people who have left that religion is they ask each other, so when did your shelf break?
Yes.
Because it all came crashing down.
Okay. Yeah. And because it's still there. So mindfulness. Okay. Yeah. This is happening. It hurts. But it doesn't mean that we won't try to do our best to change things in the future. We have limited control, but of course we take steps to make things better. But right now it's here. It's like, you know, social injustice. We can pretend it's not there, but we aren't going to fix it unless we first acknowledge it exists. First you acknowledge it, you validate it, and then you work towards changing it. Same with our own challenges and problems. So first is mindfulness. And then you can do either one of these next, but I usually go to common humanity for me personally, just remembering that I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because there's nothing wrong with me for feeling this way. There's nothing wrong with me for experiencing this. This is part of life. Many people experience this. And when we do that again, that's basically just to help us feel less isolated, and we feel more empowered when we remember that other people have gotten through this. You know, it's not just me. And then the kindness. And then kindness can be brought in through a lot of ways. A physical touch is a really effective way to bring kindness, partly because we know this as mothers, right? The way we communicate care to our babies before they learn to talk is through touch. They can feel it. Mm-hmm. And so, believe it or not, research shows when you put your own hands on your heart or your face, you lower your cortisol levels, your body responds because it's built by evolution to do so. It calms down. You feel more supported physically. And then you can say words. You can just think, what would I say to someone I really cared about, a friend or, you know, a family member who I really cared about? What would I say to them in this situation? And usually if you ask yourself that question, you would never speak to a loved one the way you speak to yourself.
Mm-hmm. No way. Oh, true. No, they wouldn't be like friends anymore.
And you would know that. What if you told your friend you're so stupid? Is that really going to help them? No, it's going to just make them feel depressed, and it's not going to help at all. And yet we think somehow it's helpful with ourselves. It's not totally logical. And there is, you know, to give ourselves a break, there's an evolutionary reason for this. It's because when there's a problem, we feel threatened.
Yeah.
So you go into fight, flight, or freeze. It's just basic evolutionary instinct. And of course, when we're the problem, we turn that inward. We fight ourselves. We beat ourselves up.
Yeah,
thinking we're going to get ourselves in line. We flee into a sense of shame and isolation, or we freeze and we get stuck and we go over and over in our heads. With your friend, you aren't so immediately threatened, so you can tap into the other system. And this is related to parenting, which is the care system. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that we have built into our bodies the ability to care means that we can tap into that system for self-care. It's not the first instinct is fight, flight, or freeze, but we have this other system called the care system. We just have to do a little hack. You got to give yourself permission to say, actually, I'm choosing to treat myself like I would my child that I love or my friend. And as parents, some people say, well, I'm just going to let myself off the hook. I'll never get anything done. Well, that would be like spoiling your child. You can do it, but is it good for your child if you said, don't worry, you don't need to go to school, eat all the sugar you want, you know, that's not caring. Sometimes as a parent, we need to draw boundaries. We need to say, hey, there are rules. It's not healthy. First and foremost, I want you to be healthy. And the same thing with ourselves. So we're more motivated to make changes, but not because we're inadequate as we are, just because we care about ourselves, just our kids. We want them to be happy. We want them to reach their full potential. We do the same thing with us. But with the bottom line, hopefully with our kids, the bottom line is unconditional acceptance. And I also want you to work hard to achieve your goals.
Yeah.
With us, bottom line is unconditional self-acceptance. And we still want to work hard to achieve our goals. Again, not to prove ourselves, but simply because we care.
Yeah.
More effective. Research shows it's more effective than self-criticism.
Yes. And I love that. And we are going to talk about too, how this applies to parenting and how it's so important to give yourself self-compassion to be a more connected and more present parent. And we're going to do that right when we come back.
Hey, all, it is Joanne.
And Bree here.
And we want to tell you about a podcast that you should check out. It's called Understood Explained. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Uturbe, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
And in this latest season of Understood Explained, it covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. We actually just listened to the episode, IEPs, Does My Child Need an IEP? And here is what we loved about it.
I loved that it was so digestible. Like, it was such a short episode, and all of the topics, which could be really confusing to parents, were easily explained.
And I loved how they gave great concrete examples, because you know how much I love me a good example. They explained what kind of services and supports you could actually see on a child's IEP or individual education plan. And they explained those acronyms. That nothing drives me more crazy than when there's acronyms and I don't get it. I don't know what it stands for. They took the time to explain everything in so much detail and to cover concerns that a lot of families have about special ed services.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains, or just click on the link in our show notes.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
One of the quotes that I read in your book, Fierce Self-Compassion, that really stuck with me is, caring for ourselves is actually the energy source powering our ability to help others. So can you tell us a little bit more about how self-compassion does this? And I loved your story about being in the airplane with your four-year-old. Can you share that?
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Some people think we only have 5 units of compassion. So if I give 3 to myself, I'm only going to have 2 left over for anyone else. It doesn't work that way. The more compassion and kindness and love flows inward, the more we have available to give to others and to sustain giving without burning out. And so with parents, it's so important. That it's important on a couple different levels. So one level is certainly it's just energetic. When you are exhausted and you're fed up, when you give and put your hands on your heart and you say, "Oh, I'm so sorry, it's so hard for you. I'm here for you. I care. What do you need right now?" You're actually replenishing your batteries. You're resourcing yourself that allows you then to go in to take care for your kids and do what they need to do. If you're just frustrated, or if you do this, "All my energy has to be spent on my kids," you're going to have nothing left over to give. It's like breathing. You have to breathe in and out. Otherwise, you're going to die. Same thing with compassion. You got to have in and out. And then the other way it works, and this is where the story comes in, is through our mirror neurons. So the human brain, our brains are designed to resonate with each other. And especially with parents and children, we're very emotionally connected to each other. So just as your kids' moods impact you, you know this, your moods impact your kids. And so when you are being self-compassionate, your children are actually resonating with your compassionate mindset, your loving, connected presence, which is one way to talk about the 3 components of self-compassion. If you're irritated, if you're frustrated, if you're burned out, if you're numb inside, that's what your kids are resonating with. And so my son is actually, he's autistic. And by the way, some people say autistic kids don't have a lot of empathy. It's totally false. They're really resonant with others. That's why they pull back. They have difficulties perspective taking cognitively, but my son and I were very, very attuned. And so I would regulate his emotions by regulating my own emotions, right? And so one time it was we were on a plane, we were flying to Europe. It was a transatlantic flight, and they turned the lights off in the plane. And because he had a lot of sensory issues, like triggered a tantrum, full on screaming, flailing tantrum. you know, and I felt like, oh my God, all these other people are judging me. It's like, there's a tantrum, and there are sometimes his old, also, I think it was actually 5 at the time. People think he should be over that. He didn't realize, people couldn't tell he was autistic.
They didn't have that self-compassion.
And so I couldn't reach him, right? And so I took him to the bathroom thinking I'd let him have his tantrum in there. It didn't help, and it was occupied. Mm-hmm. So I gave myself compassion. I just like put my hands on my heart. And I said, this is so hard, Kristen. You feel out of control. This is so, I'm here for you. I'm mainly focused on myself. I was able to calm myself down.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. he could calm down because he was resonating with me.
That co-regulation.
Right? And then once he calmed down a little bit, I could do more directly soothing of him. So, you know, what you cultivate inside is what your kids interact with. It is not separate. You know, so that's one way. And then also modeling. If you model self-compassion out loud, it's mm-hmm. the best gift you can give your kids. They will grow up knowing that it's okay to make mistakes, but you don't leave it there, and learn from them, right? When we say failure is our best teacher, that is true. You make a mistake. Well, it's okay. Everyone makes mistakes. That's interesting. What could I learn? You know, how might I do better next time? If you model that, that's such a gift to your kids. If you say, oh, I'm such an idiot in front of your kids because you don't want them to judge you, what they're really learning is, oh, that's what you're supposed to say. I'm such an idiot when you make a mistake.
Yes, yes. That's something we say here at No Guilt Mom. We say we help you go from martyr to model because it's all about what you present. It's not about what you tell your kids. They see exactly what you do.
But it's not only out loud modeling. It's also, that's the thing about mirror neurons, is it's also your presence. Mm-hmm. You know, if people pick up, it's not woo-woo, like we feeling someone's vibes.
No, it's not woo-woo.
The way the brain works, we feel each other's vibes. So cultivating an internal, warm, loving mindset is going to be so helpful to your kids. They're going to feel safer around you and feel more calm as well.
Yeah, because kids can definitely notice if you're really nervous, really anxious. Knowing this lately with my kids, what I've been doing is that if I do feel nervous or anxious, I'll go around and I'll model my self-compassion. I'll be like, I am really hurting right now. I am very nervous about this. I'm going to take a deep breath. Okay. Lots of other people are nervous like this, just like me, if they were in the same situation. And my kids look at me and they're like, okay, Mom. But I know they're picking it up. They're definitely picking it up.
And now my son totally practices self-compassion. He got through that phase of don't give that to me, Mommy. Now he knows it works. He developed anxiety disorder as he got older. So it really helps him deal with it.
Yeah. It helps a lot. Now you talk about two different types of self-compassion, tender self-compassion and fierce self-compassion. Can you tell us the difference between the two?
Yeah. So there are two different faces that's really important because people get confused. So one face is tender acceptance, and that's we accept ourselves and our emotions unconditionally. In other words, we're flawed human beings. We make mistakes. Our emotions arise. They hurt. And we just have to accept the fact that that's the way it is. We can bring warmth. And that's kind of more of a nurturing, maybe a gentle mothering quality, you might say. Mm-hmm. But there's also what I like to call mama bear self-compassion or fierce self-compassion. This is aimed more at changing behaviors or situations. It's not compassionate to accept behaviors that are harmful to ourselves or others. And it's not compassionate to accept situations that are harmful to ourselves or others. And so that's where we need to change. That's where we need to take action. So it may mean drawing boundaries, saying no, protecting ourselves, speaking up. It might mean taking time to meet your own needs or also, again, motivating change. And so as a parent, we know we need both. We love our kids unconditionally, but that doesn't mean we spoil them. It doesn't mean we don't try to motivate them. You know, it doesn't mean we don't do what we can to help them achieve their goals in life. And also, we also need to draw some boundaries with our kids.
Yeah, yes. I think that's a huge thing, right? So many moms, I feel like we think that unconditional love means that we are always going to be last. I just over the weekend, you had a really good Instagram where there was a poem you shared with this mom.
I took apart a poem.
It's not my turn.
It was that his mom was like, it's not my turn to do have what my I wants and needs.
It's not my turn to do what I want to do, but it's my turn to make family memories. I'm like, no.
Yeah, and this is exactly what you're talking about, Dr. Neff, right? That is not okay. That is where you're going to burn out.
And it's yin and yang. If you need both, if you're too about acceptance and don't draw boundaries or don't speak up, you can be complacent and you will burn out, right? Yes. On the other hand, if it's too much about my way or the highway, or I'm going to motivate you to get that grade, or and if you don't, I'm not going to love you, to ourselves or others, that's not okay either. We need both. Yeah. But you can hold them together because the acceptance is more about ourselves as people or as kids as people. We love them unconditionally. And the change or the action is more about behaviors or situations. So they actually can go together. They need to go together. One without the other is incomplete.
They do. And in For Your Self-Compassion, you talk a lot about how it shows up in adult relationships as well, particularly in heterosexual relationships. And I love the story about the woman who gave up her interior design job to take care of the baby and everything because she had all this pressure from her parents and pressure from her husband. Can you tell us about that and how she used self-compassion?
We'll be right back after a quick break.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Here's the thing, is that gender role socialization plays into this. I'm not talking about gender identity, if you identify as male, female, non-binary. I'm talking about the shoebox you were put in when you were growing up, right?
Yes.
Kids who are raised as boys, first of all, so they're allowed to be fierce. They're allowed to take action. They're supposed to take action, be fierce and be brave. But if they're too tender, they're too sensitive, they're too accepting, they get bullied. And this harms our boys because it actually reduces their emotional intelligence. Girls, on the other hand, there's a little more gender role flexibility, especially when they're young. But when you get older, you're allowed to be tender, especially towards others. But if you meet your own needs, then you're entitled.
Stand back. Yeah, you're selfish. Yeah. Get out. That's right. Lost your woman card.
Exactly. No. And because we love self-sacrificing women. And think about taking action. She's so ambitious. Mm-hmm. Think about Hillary Clinton, Kamala. They're so ambitious. You would never say that about a man. So
no.
If a woman takes the, we aren't allowed to be fierce, basically. And we really don't like angry women or women that speak up. And that leads to things like, why are women paid less? Because first of all, not only are they socialized not to negotiate, we don't like a woman who asks for what she deserves because she's not feminine. So gender role socialization.
Can I just throw in a hallelujah?
Yeah,
there?
It's just
I'm sorry. Hallelujah.
And here's the thing, is it harms everyone. It harms men and women in different ways, but it also harms men. Every single person should be allowed to express their authentic, fierce and tender side in the way that's right for them. the society doesn't really allow it. Mm-hmm. And then for parents raising your kids, really useful to think about. Are you socializing your boys to think they shouldn't be tender? They shouldn't accept things? That's going to harm them emotionally. Are you socializing the girls that shouldn't be like speak up too much or be too active?
Be too bossy.
Be too bossy.
That was one I got a lot. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But really, it's about balance. It's about yin and yang. And the research shows that people who can integrate both energies do better.
Yeah. And the job interviews, I was so mad reading these chapters, not at you, but at the situation of society in general, because
and it's still the case.
It's still the case. And just saying like how even so for jobs, a female candidate and a male candidate, completely similar things. They just had a female name and a male name, and how to balance that in the job interview. Basically, if you go in and tell your accomplishments spree in the job interview, if you're a woman, you also need to say how you want to help people around the office. And that's how you're going to balance the scales between the male candidate
Otherwise, like, oh, she's kind of stuck up or narcissistic. Yeah. You would never say, it still occurs.
I know it is.
I'm thinking in all the times that I was a hiring manager, I don't think
it's and everyone has it too.
It's unconscious. Women do it to other women even more than men. Mm-hmm. It's unconscious. It's this, do I like them or not? Which is kind of vague. A lot of it is, are they fitting my unconscious gender role stereotypes?
Wow. I see it in mom shaming too. And it's that implicit bias coming out.
So a man who just like does anything for his kids. Oh, he's such a great dad. Whereas a mother has to do like, cartwheels and earn money. It's totally different.
We were just, I just had this conversation yesterday. We were at the grocery store and I'm in the bathroom and this mom is in there, God help her, with her toddler or preschooler. And I hear her be like, listen, I understand you don't want to go potty, but we're here right now. So let's just try. And then the toddler is, no. You hear the toddler smack the mom.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you get the screaming, so loud screaming, like echoing in the bathroom. I was like, all right, well, I was already on my way out and standing there wasn't going to help her. And so I was just like, hang in there, mama. And I walk out and there's dad sitting on the bench playing on his phone. It's not his fault, but it definitely brought up a conversation with my husband about how if that had happened in the bathroom with a dad, anybody would have been like, oh, he's trying his best. But and with a mom, there was a good chance somebody would be like, well, she's not doing a very good job. Just listen to that kid screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, we really need to be conscious of gender because it does influence not only for ourselves, but also what we transmit to our kids.
Yeah,
it does. My workshops, right? Even though my research shows that self-compassion is by far one of the most powerful sources of coping and resilience. So you have combat soldiers who are more self-compassionate. They were less likely to suffer from PTSD, for instance. And yet 85% of the people that come to my workshops are women. Because compassion's a female thing. It's a shame. It's a tragedy. And it's still happening. But we're the ones who can change it with the next generation. So
yeah. And I'm hopeful too. My son, he is 10. And he and his friends actually talk about their thoughts. And my son is in therapy because I put him in therapy after COVID, after seeing some things. Uh-huh. He and his friends, they all have therapists. And they talk about their therapists. And I'm like, thank you, Generation Alpha. Yes. You are going to save us all.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It's so important.
I love that.
It's going to be great. Well, what do you have coming up for you, Dr. Nash, that you're really excited about?
I'm actually right now working with my colleague, Chris Germer, who we developed something called the Mindful Self-Compassion Program. If you want self-compassion training, you can take that. But right now we're working on a book for burnout, actually. It's
going to be
Self-Compassion Emergency Toolkit for Burnout. And the reason it's kind of slow is I started it because I was feeling so burnt out. So it wasn't the best timing, but we're doing it slow but steady. That should be coming out next year.
Well, that's fantastic.
So that's exciting. And, just building a community around people practicing self-compassion through my website. So it's really becoming a movement, a self-compassion movement. And that's just so lovely to see.
And it needs to be. It needs to be.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here. I've loved talking to you. And I can't wait to read your next book.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
So I have to say that self-compassion has really come in handy this past weekend, because here at No Guilt Mom, we have a big project going on and it's causing just a lot of stress, just because you put so much work into something and then you put something out in the world and you're worried about how it's going
it's to your baby.
Become like, yeah, exactly. And
it's,
with all
it's
that,
our baby.
It's our baby. Yes. And because of the bigness of this, I've made quite a few mistakes through the past few weeks. I sent an email to our community where it was 4 days early. And then I had to send an oops, I'm sorry email. I've messed up stuff on sales pages. And I'm just stating this because after each of those mess ups, I had two ways I could have gone. I could have been, oh my God, I suck. Why haven't I been more careful? And that's something that I would have gone down in the past, really gone into this part of self-shame. But instead, I was like, oh my gosh, you're dealing with so much right now, Joanne. This hurts you to make these mistakes. So many other people make these mistakes around you. Let's go comfort yourself. Let's give yourself a hug. It is okay. And let's keep going.
Okay.
It has made all the difference, all the difference in the world.
And we resonate that in our team, because we have a small team here at No Guilt Mom. It's 2.5, soon to be 3, 2.5 though right now of us. But one thing you were doing that if people aren't seeing a video, you put your hand over your chest when you're over your heart, when you're like, I am struggling, I am hurting. There's a lot going on. And I think that touch is a huge factor, because I know that, again, we talked about at the beginning of this episode that I struggle with not having the best self-talk, not a lot of self-compassion for myself for various reasons. But I do find that touch is what can help stop that. And like, okay, it helps you kind of refocus to that and really hear the words and feel them. So if you're hearing this and you're like, yeah, I've tried self-talk, doesn't always help, I'm not always very, I feel silly doing it, try that touch. I really think that that's super helpful.
And also, I need to bring up something else here, because I've known about self-compassion for the past 2 years, I think. It was when I checked out the book Self-Compassion at the library and I started reading it and I'm like, this is amazing.
Where has this been all my life?
That I started using it, but it never connected. We talk a lot about the football player you have who's used to playing all the games. Your football player is your negative self-talk. And that quarterback is so strong that when you look at this little bench warmer who hasn't played so much, that's your self-compassion, your positivity. The football player easily like mows it down. And it almost feels disingenuous to yourself when you start using the self-compassion, because your brain wants to fight it. This part of your brain that has been negative self-talk for so long, it wants to fight it real hard, real hard. And I was never winning against it until I got diagnosed with severe anxiety. And I started getting treated for severe anxiety. And then all of a sudden, when I use self-compassion, I'm able to quiet that football player down and really strengthen the bench warmer. So if for you, you've used it for a while, and after this podcast, think down the road, if you use it for a while and it's really not working, I highly suggest you go to a medical professional and get evaluated, because it has made so much of a difference in my life, being on the right treatment plan for anxiety and using the self-compassion.
It's a good duo.
It's a good duo. Yes, exactly. So remember, the best mom is a happy mom. Take care of you, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.